I have been criminally charged for voicing my deeply held beliefs that are based on classical Christianity.
Finnish lawmaker Dr. Pavi Rossinen, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
If this kind of questioning of free speech is possible in a country like Finland, which has a long roots in Christian culture and values and good reputation regarding free speech internationally, the same could be possible anywhere.
You can watch and listen to Dr. Päivi Räsänen making the case for Christians in the public square from the 2022 Making the Case conference. For a $300 gift by Labor Day, you can access an on-demand video stream or podcast of the entire conference. Order today at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. For nearly half a century, the decision of Roe v. Wade stifled abortion debate in the United States. It was all rather moot. You could debate, but it wasn't going to change anything. You might change some minds, but you weren't going to change the situation on the ground legally. Well, the Dobbs decision has brought great change, and maybe that debate can resume. Maybe that debate can actually have some fruit in the various states and their legislatures. But are the talking points that we've become accustomed to on the pro-life side sufficient for that debate? Where do we need to focus the abortion debate going forward? Joining us to answer that question on this Monday afternoon, Margo Cleveland. She's an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's senior legal correspondent for The Federalist and author of a recent column titled The Dobbs Debate that Democrats and the media cartel don't want Americans to have. Margo, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
How would you describe the current state of the abortion debate in the United States?
So the current state of the abortion debate is frankly no different than it was before the Dobbs decision came down, which is unfortunate. We are still seeing the exact same talking points coming from the left, and the media cartel is letting them get away with that, where you're hearing language such as health care or reproductive freedom and no real discussion on abortion, which when Dobbs was decided, the Supreme Court said this is an issue that should be returned to the people. So the people and their elected representatives should really be talking about abortion, and these catchphrases and euphemisms and talking points should be gone, but they're not.
What big change has the Dobbs ruling brought to the abortion debate, or what big change should it bring?
Well, it should bring more of a discussion and more thoughtful back and forth between the Americans on their views and why they hold those views. Before Dobbs, really, everyone could kind of punt to the courts, and that you would have legislatures pass bans, such as what Kansas did, where they passed a ban on dismemberment abortions, where a second or third trimester fetus is killed by ripping them apart while they're still alive. And the court struck that down in the Kansas case, which was actually when they invented a state constitutional right to abortion. And that's actually what you're seeing post-Dobbs. Instead of having these discussions and the people voting on regulations about abortion, you are having the abortion activists pushing for state Supreme Courts to install, again, an abortion on demand regime that was under Roe controlling, but is actually more extreme than what Roe and Casey were. And you saw that in Kansas. You see that in Michigan, where the current Democrat governor is trying to force the state Supreme Court to declare a similar right to abortion. That shouldn't be what the debate is. The people should be the ones who are deciding this issue. And we're not seeing that.
So you mentioned the media cartel. How is the press actively muddying the waters in this debate?
The press is muddying the waters by really repeating and using the euphemisms and the talking point of the left and not calling them out on it. Kansas is a perfect example. Last week in Kansas, the voters went to the polls for their primaries, and they also had a constitutional amendment. And that amendment, all it was doing was saying the Constitution in Kansas does not address abortion. There is no right to abortion. It's up to the state legislature. You had millions flooded in the Kansas market from out-of-state interests who presented this amendment in a way that was completely inaccurate, as if it was outlawing abortion with no exceptions for rape or incest, no exceptions for the health of the mother, and the media let them get away with it. They didn't call them out on their lies. Instead, you're seeing them repeat the exact same talking points. You also do not see the media asking the questions that should be asked. You view abortion as wrong. Why? You view abortion as healthcare. Why? What about this information? What about this science? They should be asking those questions, getting to the heart of the matter, instead of allowing the governor of Michigan, for instance, to get up and talk about healthcare and women's rights when it is not about healthcare or women's rights.
You say that the pro-life argument is simple and scientific. What do you mean?
The pro-life argument rests completely on science of when a new human life begins. And when Roe was decided, there was the language in there of, well, when life begins is something there's disagreement on. And Roe was conflating biology, theology, philosophy. When life begins as a biological matter is undisputed. It begins when fertilization occurs. And after the fusion of the two cells, there is a new human organism, a new human life. And that's science. That's not something any scientist will disagree on. What the debate over abortion is does that human life have a right to life, to protection? And that's where the pro-life argument is simple and scientific. It's scientific because human life exists at fertilization. And at that point, then you just look at logic. Does our law allow an innocent human life to be destroyed intentionally? And the answer is no. So the pro-life position is both scientific and simple.
Why should pro-lifers then stick with the solid definitions found in embryology?
Because science is not something debatable. And once you educate the populace on this fact, it is a lot easier than to have a legitimate discussion about views. When you are using euphemisms and talking points, you don't ever make people sit there and think about why abortion is wrong, why you need to protect the human life. And by doing so, you can convey the simple point that all human life deserves protection.
Since the science is undisputed, as you say, how should we focus the debate on abortion now?
Well, the debate on abortion right now, we should have pro-life leaders focus on the science and focus on the general law and how we always protect human life. We protect it at the infancy. We protect it in the middle age. We protect it for our elders. And the stage of development, the stage of life, is no different. Instead of talking about when abortion is right, when abortion is wrong, we should really focus on human life and the general principle that it is wrong to intentionally take another human life.
What is the abortion on demand side of the argument?
Well, the abortion on demand side of the argument, you're seeing various versions of it. So there are still some people who try to argue that it's not life, it's not human. And those individuals really are, I would say, uneducated on how their movement has moved on, that you can't continue to make this argument in the light of science. And in fact, the abortion activists don't make the argument. So you'll hear this among people who claim to be pro-choice, but who are not maybe activists out there because they don't realize that the activists no longer make those types of claims. And one of my favorite things to do when someone says, that's a zygote, that's not a human being, or that's an embryo, that's not human, is, for instance, on social media, I'll take a picture of a bovine embryo or a bovine zygote, which is a little calf. And it's like, no, a zygote is either human or it's not human. But if you have two human parents, it is a human zygote. That's just the technical term for the stage of development, just like an infant is, just like a newborn or a toddler. The second argument that you will see, and this is one that will come from more activist politicians, is that the woman has a right to make this decision because it is her body. Now, if that is the argument, then you have to stop and say, okay, what are the natural consequences of that argument? And the natural consequences are abortion on demand until the moment of birth. And you will see Democrat politicians, abortion activists who don't want to discuss that reality, but that is the position they hold. And from a logical standpoint, if you're going to say that any human being within the human's body, she has the right to decide on, their position is completely logical. It's also completely wrong. And most of America would see that because they recognize that when you have an 8-month-old fetus, that just because it is still in utero does not mean that you have the right to kill that unborn child. At the same time, this is where it becomes hard. The public as a whole really moves, when I say the public as a whole, I mean the so-called moderates on abortion or the middle of America on abortion. Once the fetus looks like a newborn, that's when they start to say, okay, it's wrong. It's completely emotive. You have a very, very small embryo. And because it doesn't quite look like a baby yet, they kind of shrug off abortion. But the reality is, it is still a human life, just as it is at 8 or 9 months. So you see that kind of inconsistency. But on the pro-abortion side, what they're saying is because the woman's body has to nurture this child, if she decides she doesn't want to, then she has the right to have an abortion. And really, if you don't value human life, there's not a good counter to that. You have to have kind of the first principles that you don't have the right to kill another human life, even if that life is dwelling within you. And then we have one third argument. This argument is that, yes, it's human life, but the only reason we protect human life is because of what makes it unique, that a human being has the ability to think, to process, to have self-awareness. And because a fetus doesn't have those capabilities, there is no reason it is wrong to kill the fetus. The problem with that is many, if not all, newborns don't have that ability either. If you're going to distinguish between humans who have this ability of self-awareness, it is going to go well past birth. And at times, all humans could lack it if they're in a coma, if they are unconscious. So that argument actually, as I say, proves too much. And I think that most Americans would also disagree with the idea that human life is only valuable if there is this ability of self-awareness, that society as a whole still sees human beings as unique in life as opposed to animals or other types of life.
Margo Cleveland is our guest. We're talking about refocusing the abortion debate. When we return, what questions should those who want to position themselves as abortion moderates ask themselves?
In making its decisions, the government shouldn't do so with an eye toward helping one religious sect or another. It should be neutral, and it shouldn't muck about in the affairs of the religious realm.
Former Attorney General Bill Barr speaking at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Their brand of secularism is really about destroying and subsuming the religious sphere altogether. And that's what I say. The threat today is not that religious people are out to establish a theocracy in the United States. It is that militant secularists are trying to establish an atheocracy.
You can watch and listen to a recording of Bill Barr making the case against the progressive assault on the U.S. Constitution from this year's Making the Case conference. It's available in both video and audio formats for a tax-deductible contribution of $300. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It's August, and time to look forward to the academic year. Ad Crucem has just what you need to beautify your classroom, at home or school. We've crafted a series of posters to put what we believe, teach, and confess on display. See our Ten Commandments, Lord's Prayer, Luther's Daily Prayers, Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, Athanasian Creed, Liturgical Calendar, and much more. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Do you know a child with autism, dyslexia, ADHD, or Down syndrome? Do you have a student who needs an effective yet more gently paced education? We invite you to visit simplyclassical.com for a complete academic curriculum rooted in the truth of God's Word, the mercy of forgiveness, and the peace of Christ. From Memoria Press, simplyclassical.com, promo code LPR22.
Folks, for a $300 donation by Labor Day, we'll send you a link, username, and password to video and audio recordings of the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Speakers include Bill Barr, Dr. Pavi Rossinen, Dr. Albert Moeller, Pastor Will Whedon, Dr. Joel Bierman, Pastor Chris Rosebro, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Find out more at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. We're talking about refocusing the abortion debate. Margo Cleveland is our guest. Margo, you mentioned some of these questions before, but if someone wants to cast themselves as an abortion moderate, what questions should they ask themselves?
So abortion moderates should ask themselves several questions. Why do they think abortion is wrong in some circumstances? That would be the first and foremost question. And I don't think that most abortion moderates are really asking that question, because if they were, they would end up of the position that all abortion is wrong. I don't think that abortion moderates are saying, well, it's because the baby looks like a human being. That's probably what they feel, but I bet that most of them have not quite put their finger on why they believe what they believe. So really, it's going to require some self-reflection to find out why are they taking the position that they are taking.
So let's talk about some of the exceptions that people in the kind of moderate camp want to discuss. And that first one is probably rape and incest. How does it hold up to the logic of this debate?
Rape and incest, and let me actually start with incest for a second, because that's always thrown in there, and I frankly think it shouldn't be. Incest, if it's of a child, is by definition rape. If it is someone who is over 18 and it's not a matter of rape, the question I have is, why do we put it in the same category? But just using that grouping of rape and incest, it is something that is so horrible and society sees it as so horrible that society, when you're talking about abortion, they often feel that this is just so horrible. I can't imagine that a pregnancy shouldn't be terminated under those circumstances. But again, the reason abortion is wrong is because it's killing another human being. And whether it was violence that caused that human life to come into existence or not, it doesn't change the reality of science. And here, I think this is another interesting point for your audience to consider. And this is something I only considered a couple years ago when someone on the pro-choice side made the argument. If you think abortion is okay in the case of rape, what you're really saying is the reason abortion is wrong is because you don't like women voluntarily having sex. And I thought, what? That doesn't make any sense. But from a abortion advocate's position, it does. You are saying because you didn't choose to have sex, you can have an abortion. So what you're doing is saying, well, if you chose to have sex, then shame on you. You can't have an abortion. And really, it's an inconsistency that drives the pro-choice view that it is punishment for women's sexuality when the pro-choice view is ignoring the reality of human life. So logically, there is no distinction. Abortion in all cases ends a human life. I understand. I can't even imagine having a child that was a victim of rape or incest, but it doesn't change the reality that the abortion destroys that innocent human life.
What about the life of the mother exception?
So the life of the mother exception is very similar in the rape and incest exception in that people have kind of a knee-jerk reaction without thinking about it. When you are talking about an abortion, you are talking about intentionally killing the unborn child. You're intentionally killing the fetus. And when you are treating the mother, that is not killing the fetus. So, for instance, if you have a mother who is hemorrhaging and she is pregnant, if you do an emergency C-section to stop the hemorrhaging, the baby, if it is too undeveloped to survive, will die. But that is not intentionally killing the unborn child. It is intentionally saving the mother's life by treating the hemorrhaging. And this is something that you are seeing quite a bit of when you're talking about the talking points that are out there, that treating of a pregnancy loss or treating of a ectopic pregnancy where the embryo attaches other than in the uterus, that people are calling that an abortion, and it's not. So when you're talking about the life of the mother, it also doesn't change that that is another human being. But it isn't an abortion when you are treating the mother and the child might die. If you want a dead body, that's the abortion. When you are trying to treat the mother, it's a very sad consequence, but it is not the intentional killing of the child.
Why should pro-life leaders back off of their talking points and change their method of debate?
The reason for backing off the talking points is very simple. They aren't working. We have changed the debate, and the only way that the moderates are going to understand and appreciate the reality of abortion is if that's what we're talking about. And if we're talking about you're destroying a human life, that's part talking point, but you need to bring the science there first. So when you have the media involved, oftentimes what the media will try to do is to corner the pro-life side with the extremist label. So you wouldn't even support an exception for rape or incest, would you? That's the wrong place to be talking. The talking is, why is abortion wrong? Let's start there, and let's talk about that. I want to find out why we're disagreeing on abortion. So you have to find out where your disagreement stems from before you can look at specific scenarios. And it's going to be hard because the media does not want that discussion. So they're going to constantly push and force answers on specifics. But now as a society, we are allowed to have this discussion, and it matters. Under Roe and Doe, it didn't matter. It mattered what five justices said. But now it matters. So we need to start pushing back and saying, we have the choice now to discuss this, and that's what I'm going to do. I want to find out where we disagree. Why is abortion ever appropriate? Why? What is the theory behind it? Here's the pro-life position, and state it, starting with science, refuting the talking points of it's a clump of cells and it's not human life, and move from there.
Finally, you have noted that abortion is going to be, in some form or another, part of the debate going into the midterm elections. What's your best advice to pro-life politicians who want to defend the unborn, even in a post-Roe world?
Right. So this is something that's going to be challenging because we still have the hostile media. So my recommendation to pro-life politicians is to do not equivocate. Make sure you make your point and you make it clearly and that you make it based on science and logic. Don't let the other side frame the debate. And when you have a framing that's false or ambiguous or trying to short circuit the debate, let's go back to first principles. Always return to first principles. What does science teach us? What does the law tell us about human life? And if you are debating someone who is using the talking points, call them out for that and use logic and reason to reach the populace. But at the same time, we have 50 years of disrespect for human life that this country has lived under. We have three generations alive and unfortunately probably three generations dead because of Roe. We are not going to be able to reach the middle overnight. It doesn't mean that you have to abandon principles, but you also do need to recognize saving some lives is better than none. You saw that with Indiana. Indiana passed a ban on abortions, but with rape and incest exceptions in some circumstances. Are those justified? Not logically, not scientifically, but politically and pragmatically. It doesn't mean that the pro-life leaders capitulated. It means that they were cognizant of the type of society we live in, and we need to teach and bring people to the point where they recognize all human life in utero deserves protection.
Margot Cleveland is an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's senior legal correspondent for The Federalist and author of a recent column titled "The Dobbs Debate That Democrats and the Media Cartel Don't Want Americans to Have." You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Margot, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Tuesday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss COVID-19 vaccines with cardiologist Dr. Peter McCullough, and we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Moses and the burning bush in Exodus chapters 2 and 3. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.